Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. What's that smell? I'm sure you've said that many times, or at least thought that when you entered a room or passed by a storefront. The sense of smell and the related sense of taste are important to all people, but perhaps especially to those who are visually impaired. Today, I will take you on a smelling tour of New York City a couple of different ways, and I'll share some more scientific information about the sense of smell. The first article is from by Alexandra Levine from the New York Times. It was published on May 21st in 2018. It's not actually about people with vision loss, but I'm sure you can relate to it. What does your neighborhood smell like? This headline reads, New York Today, Smelling Your Way to Work. A picture is at the top of this article, and it shows a woman sniffing the bark of a tree. The caption reads, New York City is rife with scents, S-C-E-N-T-S, smells, that make it a diverse smellscape, according to a researcher who designed maps of odors. It's on lovely days like this that we take more time than usual to stop and smell the roses, or the bus fumes, or fresh bagels, or the construction dust, or the deodorant of the subway passenger holding the pole above you, armpit pressed conveniently into your nostrils. On one recent work-bound walk to the F train, I was puzzled to meet a half dozen separate smells along just one block. Garbage, which seemed peculiar on a decently clean sidewalk. Skunk, which left me wondering how prevalent the animals are in the city. Cookies, which nearly caused me to detour, and burned rubber, then grass, and then dish soap. These scents may come from miles away, according to Dr. Kate McLean, a candidate at the Royal College of Art in London. Her research has focused on mapping urban smellscapes. She has led smell walks through New York, Amsterdam, Milan, and other major cities to explore how they can be identified by smell, the same way we might characterize a city by the sight of its skyline or the taste of its specialty dishes. Smelly, in Ms. McLean's terms, is anything that smells, either good or bad, she told us, and continued by saying, my definition has equally positive connotations and negative ones. It's an incredibly useful word to be able to point to the whole range of odors. Well, New York City, then, is highly smelly, making it excellent terrain for a smell walk. Dr. McLean recently led a smell walk through Central Park. The stroll explored both fainter, harder-to-detect smells traveling from long distances, perhaps by the wind or water, and the close-up smells, the ones that might only be released on physical contact or on breaking or scratching, Dr. McLean said. You need to sniff rather than just breathe in order to get the maximum impact, she told the participants. We get about 10% of olfactory molecules hitting our olfactory receptors if we breathe, but we can double that if we sniff more deeply. With each long inhale, they wrote a description and noted a duration, intensity, and association for each smell. She said, it brings out how many smells there are that normally pass unnoticed. She noted, not surprisingly, that some of New York City's most distinctive smells are its subway stations and its pretzel stands. But one we hadn't heard before, a composite of fried garlic, wheatgrass, and tarmac. She said, it's particular to a very hot summer's day, Ms. McLean said. The smell from the sidewalk and the reflective qualities of the tarmac and garlic, it's very, very New York. It's healthy living alongside the traffic, alongside the heat. So, I better repeat the question that I posed at the start of this article. What does your neighborhood smell like? Another one from the U.S. edition of The Guardian newspaper, published in April of 2016, Smelling New York, a blind man about the scents and sounds of the city. Frank Senior, that's his last name, S-E-N-I-O-R, Frank Senior, a lifelong New Yorker, recognizes changing neighborhoods by their smells. He tells Craig Taylor from The Guardian about a city full of surprises. In his own word, he says, I am blind, so my nose tells me what neighborhood I'm in. My dog and I, we walk. We'll walk from 125th down to Houston. The smell of Harlem is definitely different now. It's more open. There's a new class of people. The whole thing feels like someplace else. As we walk through the city, I hear the different kinds of neighborhoods. Black people turning into white people. Spanish people turning into black people. I hear the sounds of the languages, the vendors, the different kinds of ways that the different cultures sell their stuff, present it. Black voices, white voices. I used to even be able to pick out if someone was biracial. They just had a certain texture in the voice and a clarity in their voice and a thickness in their voice that would say, this is both. And now it's harder to do because everybody's mixed now. It's not as easy. Years ago, I used to walk in Hell's Kitchen and pass all the railroad apartments and all the tenement buildings and people sitting on the stoop playing checkers. You could hear the dominoes. You could hear the checkers. And then you could hear who's playing them because Spanish people love the dominoes. You hear them banging the dominoes. Boom, boom, boom. Black people would be playing checkers. You hear them slamming the checkers. Then there was a difference. I've been living in the city all my life, when Times Square was, you know, the dump, the symbol of the underworld. When you got off the bus at the Port Authority, it smelled like sex. I used to say, this is what tourists have come into? Nasty, sex, groin, hair, and underarm, you name it. That's what it smelled like. Pee. Everything. I mean, that's how bad Times Square was. It was horrible. I used to run a newsstand on 42nd Street. People used to come by my stand because they knew I was going to be open. I was always open. I got to know the city that way, the people, the goodness, just by being out there. There was an English dude, a nice guy. I used to welcome him because a lot of times I didn't want to sit there by myself that early in the morning. He'd come by at about 6 a.m. He'd sit and drink his coffee and stand outside and talk to me, give me a New York Times that he just finished reading. We did this for 3 months. One day I said, hey man, do you play chess? He said, yeah. I said, we should get together and play some chess. Where do you live? He said, oh mate, I live on Central Park West. Oh man, I thought this guy's got some bread too. What's your address? I asked. You know 65th Street, he answered. You walk up to 65th, make a right, and I'm the fifth bench in. This guy was homeless, but to me he just smelled like cologne. He was clean. So you always know you don't know. That's the other beautiful thing about New York. One day I was standing on Madison and 23rd. I came up to the corner. I felt my dog's head nudge someone so we could fit. And the guy goes to me, what are you, blind or something? I started to say, fuck you, but instead I started with, yo man, what do you think I got the dog for? He goes, oh, you got a dog? I'm blind, too. He said, I was going to ask you to help me across the street. I said, I can do that. I can help you across the street, man. He grabbed my arm, held it tight, and we went across together. You know that story about the smells of certain neighborhoods? I noticed that the other day after I was preparing this article for you. I walked into a Target store, and my brain said to me, yes, this store smells like a Target store. I have no idea what that smell is, but to me it said it smells like Target. So think of that next time you go into a Target store. Now we go into a website that's called livescience.com. And please note, they claim this is new research, but please be aware that the date is 2010. So it's not really new, but I thought the article was still interesting. This one is titled, Do Blind People Have a More Acute Sense of Smell? This question has been asked for a long time. This article is by Live Science staff, and it was dated April 26, 2010. It's from a section called Life's Little Mysteries. New research refutes the age-old myth that the loss of one sense may sharpen other senses. A new study, again, new in quotation marks, a new study from the University of Montreal found that blind people have no keener sense of smell than the sighted. Vision loss simply makes blind people pay more attention to how they perceive smells, the researchers said. Here's a quote. If you enter a room in which coffee is brewing, you will quickly look for the coffee machine. The blind person entering the same room will only have the smell of coffee as information, said graduate researcher Mathilde Bouliot-Lefebvre. That smell will therefore become very important for their spatial representation. This study involved 25 subjects, 11 of whom had been blind since birth. Participants answered a questionnaire and then participated in two experiments. In the first, they tried to distinguish among 16 different perfumes. In the second, they lay in a machine called a tomodesensitometer and tried to identify three smells, a rose, vanilla, and butanol, which is a sweet alcohol. Here's a quote. There is an urban legend that blind people have better smell than sighted people. We are proving this to be false, said Maurice Petito, a professor at the University of Montreal and Bouliot-Lefebvre's thesis director. He continues, however, the blind do set themselves apart when it comes to cognitive efforts. Using functional imagery, the researchers determined that the blind use a region of the brain called the secondary olfactory cortex more than sighted people when they smell. They also use the occipital cortex, which is normally used for vision. A quote, that's interesting because it means the blind people are recuperating that part of the brain, said Petito. We are not speaking of recycling per se, yet that part of the brain is reorganizing and used otherwise. The loss of vision may affect each of the other senses differently. A 1998 Vanderbilt University study found that children with visual disabilities were somewhat better than sighted children at determining what direction a sound was coming from. The research on the sense of smell could lead to concrete applications that may help blind people navigate in their surroundings. And a quote, for instance, smells are very popular in shopping centers, said Dr. Bouliot-Lefebvre. A hair salon, a pharmacy, and a clothing store each have their own distinctive scent. We could easily foresee developing readaptation programs for getting around in such places. And once again, this was a study done by Mathilde Bouliot-Lefebvre from the University of Montreal back in 2010. We have another article from a website called How Stuff Works. And this title is The Curious Ability to Detect Disease by Smell. This is by Lori Dove. You smell, and it's perfectly natural. Each person's scent is part and parcel of their biological makeup. It acts as a unique identifier and offers clues about a person's physical or mental health. As Ben Bolin explains, diabetes, for example, can make a person's body smell like rotten apples, while typhoid fever has the odor of baked bread. Yellow fever smells like a butcher shop. Liver disease causes the breath to smell fishy. And schizophrenia has the odor of overripened fruit. These smells all have to do with the way a diseased cell metabolizes. A diseased cell releases different chemicals. They're called volatile organic compounds, VOCs. These are the things that are coming from a diseased cell. And they release more of them than a healthy cell. As these compounds change, so do the smells that emanate from the body, especially the sweat, blood, breath, and urine. A Swedish study recently found that the immune system's response to certain diseases can also produce scents. The smells of disease are not a new discovery. It is believed that Hippocrates used smell to diagnose ailments as he sniffed people's breath and urine, and he probably wasn't the first. The ability to smell something has probably been an important evolutionary skill for ages, helping our animal ancestors and modern humans alike steer clear of diseased mates. The real news here is that we're beginning to discover just how powerful this sense of smell is when it comes to sniffing out disease. For example, a woman in Scotland noticed her husband's body odor was changing, becoming increasingly musky as his Parkinson's disease progressed. Scientists at Edinburgh University put her nose to the test. They asked her to identify whether a variety of test subjects had Parkinson's. She identified 12 people as having the disease, 11 of whom were confirmed at the time, and a 12th one who developed Parkinson's 8 months later. This led her to a 100% success rate. If some people can do such an outstanding job of identifying disease based on smell, just think what canines can do. A dog's sense of smell could be as much as 100,000 times more acute than yours or mine. Dogs have been trained to detect blood sugar fluctuations, the onset of seizures, and other adverse medical conditions, and they seem to be especially good at detecting prostate cancer. Several studies conducted by High Wycombe Hospital found that out of 900 samples, dogs were able to correctly identify prostate cancer 98% of the time. The dogs were even able to tell the difference between prostate cancer and other types of cancer. And a recent Scientific Reports study showed mice were able to detect Alzheimer's by the scent of urine. In the future, the training and natural instincts of these four-legged finders could be channeled into a machine with extraordinary olfactory senses. A pocket-sized radio device called Cyrano's, this is clearly a nod to the fictional character Cyrano de Bergerac. This pocket-sized radio device takes in gas, analyzes it for certain VOCs, those volatile organic compounds from a diseased cell, and then this device can diagnose certain conditions like pneumonia or sinusitis. Now we go to from WebMD, what is anosmia? Most of us take our sense of smell for granted. But have you ever thought about what it would be like to not be able to smell something? The complete loss of smell is called anosmia. It's spelled A-N-O-S-M-I-A, anosmia. Without your sense of smell, food tastes differently, you can't smell the scent of a flower, and you could find yourself in a dangerous situation unknowingly. For example, without the ability to detect odors, you wouldn't smell a gas leak. You wouldn't smell smoke from a fire or if your milk was sour. Taste and smell disorders send hundreds of thousands of Americans to the doctor every year. Fortunately for most people, anosmia is a temporary nuisance caused by a severely stuffy nose from a cold. Once the cold runs its course, the person's sense of smell returns. But for some people, including many elderly, the loss of sense of smell may persist. In addition, anosmia can be a sign of a more serious medical condition. Any ongoing problems with smell should be checked out by a doctor. First, we come to the basics of smell from WebMD. A person's sense of smell is driven by certain processes. First, a molecule released from a substance, such as fragrance from a flower, must stimulate special nerve cells. These are called olfactory cells. They are found high up in the nose. These nerve cells then send information to the brain, where the specific smell is identified. Anything that interferes with these processes, such as nasal congestion, nasal blockage, or damage to the nerve cells themselves, can lead to loss of smell. And the ability to smell also affects our ability to taste. Without the sense of smell, our taste buds can only detect a few flavors, and this can affect your quality of life. Some of the causes of anosmia now: nasal congestion from a cold, allergy, sinus infection, or poor air quality is the most common cause of anosmia. There are some other causes, and they can include nasal polyps, which are small, non-cancerous growths in the nose and sinuses that block the nasal passages, could also be caused by injury to the nose and the smell nerves from surgery or head trauma. Another possible cause would be exposure to toxic chemicals, such as pesticides or certain solvents. Another cause for your loss of smell might be medications, including some antibiotics, possible antidepressants, anti-inflammatory medication, or heart medications, among others. This would be a good topic to talk to your doctor or your pharmacist about. Another possible cause of anosmia would be cocaine abuse. And then we come to the big one, old age. Like vision and hearing, your sense of smell can become weaker as you age. In fact, one sense of smell is most keen between the ages of 30 and 60 and begins to decline after that point. Another possible cause of anosmia is certain medical conditions such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, nutritional deficiencies, congenital conditions, and hormonal disturbances. And the final possible cause might be radiation treatment to your head or neck cancers. Symptoms of anosmia, this is pretty obvious. The obvious sign of anosmia is a loss of sense of smell. Some people with anosmia notice a change in the way things smell. For example, familiar things begin to lack any odor. How do they go about diagnosing it? If you experience a loss of smell that you can't attribute to a cold or an allergy, or which doesn't get better after a week or two, tell your doctor. Your doctor can take a look inside your nose with a special instrument to see if a polyp or a growth is impairing your ability to smell, or if there might be an infection in there. Further testing by a doctor who specializes in nose and sinus problems, we call it an ear, nose, and throat doctor, or an ENT. It's also called, more professional term, otolaryngologist. You may need to see one of those doctors to determine the cause of anosmia. A CAT scan might be necessary, a CT scan, so that the doctor can get a better look of that area. Treatments. If nasal congestion from a cold or allergy is the cause of anosmia, treatment is usually not needed, and the problem will get better on its own. Short-term use of over-the-counter decongestants may open up your nasal passages so you can breathe more easily. However, if the congestion gets worse or does not go away after a few days, see your doctor. You may have an infection and need antibiotics, or another medical condition may be to blame. If a polyp or growth is present, surgery may be needed to remove the obstruction and regain your sense of smell. If you suspect a medication is affecting your sense of smell, talk to your doctor or your pharmacist and see if there is another treatment option available that won't affect your ability to smell. However, never stop taking a medication without first checking with your doctor. Sometimes a person will regain his or her sense of smell spontaneously. Unfortunately, anosmia is not always treatable, especially if age is the cause. But there are steps you can take to make living with the inability to smell more pleasant and safer for you. For example, put fire detectors and smoke alarms in your home and office, and take extra care with leftovers. If you have any doubt about food safety, don't eat it. Throw it out. If you smoke, quit. Smoking can dull your senses, including your sense of smell. Now we have some other more scientific things for you. You can. This comes from a website called CogniFit.com. Start out with a couple of curiosities that they mention, your sense of smell curiosities. The sense of smell also allows us to appreciate the smells of things and people. However, not everybody smells like us or is pleasurable to our nose. Thus, we can differentiate those bodies that smell odoriferous or those who don't. For a body to release an odor, it is necessary to free small volatile particles that are the ones that penetrate our olfactory system. With that in mind, the more particles emitted, the more intense the body will smell. We've got sense of smell disorders. I told you about one, anosmia. That's going to be the one we start with. But these are some others that are related to that. And this, again, is from the website called CogniFit.com. Anosmia, as we just mentioned, is the total or partial loss of smell, permanently or for a time. Hyposmia is what they call a reduced sense of smell. Hyperosmia is a very sensitive sense of smell. Parosmia, P-A-R-O-S-M-I-A, is the inability of the brain to properly identify an odor's natural smell, identify neutral or pleasant odors as unpleasant, perhaps. This is parosmia. Then we've got one called phantosmia. It's a kind of olfactory hallucination by which people detect an odor despite it being absent. They detect odors that are not there at the moment, phantosmia. This word osmia comes from a Greek word, O-S-M-E, which means, no surprises here, smell. You can, from a website visionaware.com, you can practice ways to maximize your sense of smell. Throughout the day, you can learn to pay attention to the various smells and odors that you encounter and begin to associate them with where you are and the activities that you're performing in that location. You can ask yourself what smells may indicate that you're in a specific area of your home. Are you near a friend who wears a distinctive perfume? When choosing flowers for planting or for arrangements, be aware of the different fragrances, textures, and color contrast. Another idea, try to tell the difference between the smells from differently shaped containers throughout your home. Take a smell of that liquid soap container and then compare it to the liquid laundry detergent. Smell a can of soda. Smell a bottle of liquor or wine. Smell your ketchup. Smell your mayonnaise. Smell your mustard, for example. If you have low vision, you can ask yourself, are you using your remaining vision to further confirm the details that your other senses are providing? Now, I noticed a little touch of humor with this article. It comes with a picture. The picture is of Jimmy Durante, and the caption says, Jimmy Durante, the beloved schnozzola, a man who made the most of his nose. So I think it's only fitting that I end this program with a quote from Jimmy Durante. He claimed, "My nose isn't big. I just happen to have a very small head." That's James Francis Durante, who lived from February in 1893 to January of 1980. He's an American singer, pianist, comedian, and actor. His distinctive, clipped, gravelly speech, his Lower East Side Manhattan accent, comic language butchery, jazz-influenced songs, and prominent nose helped make him one of America's most familiar and popular personalities from the 1920s through the 1970s. He often referred to his nose as the schnozzola, from the Yiddish word slang word schnoz, meaning big nose, and the word became his nickname, Jimmy Durante. Thank you for... Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great week.
Today I read a book. I can't remember when, but one of these days I'm gonna do it again. Yes, one of these days I'm gonna do it again.
You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.